We are officially recording.
Great, thanks, Chris. So I'd like to call to order this meeting of the Committee for Citizen Involvement. It's Tuesday, April 28th, 2020. It is 5:34 p.m. The first item on our agenda is the approval of the February 18th meeting notes. Did anyone have any comments?
No comment.
No.
Councilor Cummings.
Hi, Terry.
Okay, yeah, I'll be abstaining because I have not had a chance to read it and I wasn't at the meeting.
Okay.
In the future, is the feedback from me?
It sounds like it. I'm not sure why though.
Okay, is that irritating you guys too?
It's like an echo.
Sounds pretty bad to me.
Echo.
Okay.
I'm wondering if Lynn could mute her phone. That might be what's doing it.
Lynn is muted right now. Well,
is she calling user two?
No, that's Dan.
Okay, sorry.
No, that's okay. In fact,
there's one kind of CC. Oh, sorry. Go ahead. One CCI kind of related request. When we post our agendas, if we present a live link to those minutes, then I would have been able to read them, and the public would have been able to read them. And the same thing with the letter to the city council. It's nice to have, when you present an agenda, to have those things accessible right there.
No problem. I'll make sure that any of those links go up next time. The letter wasn't available until
half hour ago.
1 minute ago.
Yeah, I noticed that. You're right. I was looking all over for it and I was wondering. Okay, thank you.
But the minutes, I'll definitely make sure we can link to those. No problem.
Thank you.
Okay. So on the, I only saw one thing on the meeting notes, and that's on the second page. The second paragraph, the committee report also included a recommendation two and that. So I think the two should be deleted. But other than that, they look great.
I'll go ahead and make a motion to approve the meeting notes with the one change noted by Gary.
Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Have any further discussion? And let's call the roll on the vote on the meeting notes. Chris, how do you want to do this?
I can certainly call roll if you'd like to.
Let's try that.
Okay. So let's see. Let's back up here. Flip over. Okay. So the motion is to approve the minutes with the change. Vicky.
Yes.
That's a yes approval, correct?
Approval. Yes.
Okay. Ed.
Yes.
And SportEyes, Shannon Knight.
Yes.
All right. And let's see, Councilor Cummings, you are abstaining. Dan.
Approved.
And Chair Volvotny.
Yes.
All right. I think that was everyone, so that's all approved with one abstention. Motion passes.
So it doesn't appear that we have any public comments. Nothing came in as far as I know.
I've seen nothing.
We have no one present online. So the next item is to review the draft letter to council regarding CCI reorganization. So this letter has to do with the discussion we had in February. There was a prior discussion in October, but we were doing a, we had a short, we only had four people. So it was a quorum, but, and there was a confirmation of this change at that meeting as well. So it's referenced in the letter, but with new members and just having a full, a fuller group, a more complete CCI in February, it just made sense to rediscuss it and make sure this is the direction that we wanted to go. So, so I don't know if you've had a chance to read it because it only came out a half hour ago or 40 minutes ago. So, basically,
the same as what we looked at last month.
It's, well, it's a complete letter. It's a different letter than you looked at before. Okay. But it references that that letter that you had last or in February. So,
let's see if I saw it. I didn't see anything.
I forwarded it to the group at about 5:06 p.m. today.
Okay, so I probably left work already. All right. All right.
Okay.
So if need be, we can move this to the next meeting as well.
This is Dan here, any specific items you'd like us to look at as we're reviewing it?
Well, the discussion has really hinged on the membership and the structure of the CCI. Or currently we have seven members, and there are two members at large, a business member, the president of the neighborhood association, presidents, and then I'm on as the chair of the planning commission, and then we have two members of the city council, and both members of the city council have voting rights. And none of the other advisory boards to council have counselors as voting members except the CCI. So the thought was that to increase citizen participation, counselor participation or membership, that we should cut back to one voting membership from the council on the CCI, and then increase the at-large membership to three.
Chair Molbotny, if you want, I can share a copy of the the letter on the screen.
That would be great. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm just reading it now. It looks fine to me.
Chair Wolbani? I just wanted to point out some feedback from the council about this. It sounds like there's an interest on the discussion with the council about an interest in having the CCI be more of a watchdog type role, of an independent body almost type of a role. And so not so much in the direction of councilors being voting members, and probably more in line with the regular advisory model where a counselor would be a liaison.
Okay.
So I just wanted to let you know that we've been having that discussion.
Okay.
We would like it to be a more of a citizen-driven type of thing, basically with the idea that your role is to look at how well we're doing with making information available and readily accessible to the public.
That sounds good, and I think that was kind of the direction, at least in discussions last year. We were hoping to go in that direction with a liaison from council to CCI.
And there's one more thing. You know, with this particular configuration, that basically means 8 members. And our municipal code 2.035, you know, calls for 7 members. So if you wanted to consider not having the counselor be a voting member, then it would be like with all other citizen engagement groups where you'd have a council liaison.
Okay.
It's just something to think about.
So any comments from other members of the committee? It would seem that we would then increase the at-large membership to 4 people and then plus the liaison.
Well, the liaison wouldn't be a member. So then I think you just leave it at that, because right now the numbers that you have does amount to 8 people.
Right, but thinking that in that 2 members came out of, I think, prior discussions.
Oh, okay. 3.
So it's a 3.
Yeah. Increase your, you guys should probably talk about how you want to increase that. Have more citizens or.
With a liaison from the council, then we would have 7 other members.
Right.
So we could have 4 at large, 1 right. member from the business community, president of NAP, and then the chair of the PC. And that gets us to 7.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, that seems fine to me.
I mean, unless you feel strongly otherwise, you know, I'm just giving you input. This is the discussions we've had. We haven't had a vote on it or anything. So I'm not really in a strong position to be telling you what the council's position is. I'm just telling you about the discussions we've had.
Right.
But so if we were to propose this to council, though, then most likely they would all be in agreement. It's kind of the...
That's my perception.
Okay. So I guess then we should talk further about making another change to the organization of the CCI, because the way it's laid out here is a different discussion than we voted on in February. Okay. So does anyone have any comments on changing this again? So 4 citizen at large members, 1 member from the business community, the president of the neighborhood association presidents, and the chair of the planning commission. And that brings us to 7, and we would have a liaison from city council.
I think that's a good approach. I would be in favor of that.
Any other comments?
I mean, I think from a consistency perspective, Councillor Cummings is right on. It seems like that just makes better sense in trying to be efficient and do things consistently from committee to committee. And if it is the citizen, totally just blanked out on what we're called, Committee for Citizen Involvement, thank you. Then yeah, citizens should probably make up the majority of the committee. I mean, not that Gary or Shannon or Ed aren't citizens. Well, I guess, Shannon, you're our business representative, I suppose.
Yeah.
But no, I think you're right. I think that's a good, that seems like a good direction to go.
Yeah.
But that's just staff liaison speaking.
I can't see everyone. Oh, there. Okay. Any comments
drop off.
Vicky or Dan?
I'm okay. I'm good with it. Okay. The new structure.
No comments from me. I would just make sure we define the goals. If we haven't, very clearly what we want the additional citizens to do. And, if it's to represent the community, that's pretty easy.
Yeah.
Right. And if the membership is those four positions are at large, they would be from throughout the community.
Mm-hmm.
So I can make a change to the letter, but I guess we should have a motion and a vote just to document directing me in that action.
Okay.
So if anyone has a motion, now's the time.
I'll move to direct the chair to modify his letter of April 28th, 2020 to reflect that we should have four citizen at-large positions, the chair of the Planning Commission, the president of NAP, one member from the business community as voting members on CCI, and in addition, a non-voting city council liaison.
Do we have a second?
I'll second that.
Great. A motion and a second. Any further discussion? Councillor Cummings? Oh, your microphone's muted.
Chair Wilvotny, can I just for a moment?
Yes.
The feedback is being caused by either someone on a speakerphone. Is the caller on a speakerphone?
That could be me. I'm on my car phone. So I'm going to have to sign off in a couple minutes, but I'll be more diligent about muting my mic.
Yeah, you can't be on a speaker phone if you're calling in because that's causing the feedback.
Okay. Councillor Cummings?
Yes, just one more thing. The thing about a councillor being a voting member of a citizen advisory group is that I think it gives us undue influence, and we want to have your advice. And so it actually makes me uncomfortable. That's why I didn't make the motion. It's just not a role I'm used to being in, and I don't feel like I would just rather that the citizen advisory groups consist of citizens, and because we need your advice. We need as much of a well-rounded group of people to give that advice, and then the advice that you give us, we act on that. And so it seems like double dipping in a way for us to be on your board and to be voting. So.
Okay. So. Any further comments? If not, Chris, would you call the roll?
Yes, I will do so. Let me flip my page over here. All right, so I'll see if I can go in the same order I went last time. So on that motion, Vicky.
Yes, to the motion.
Yes, to the motion. Now I can't remember. I think I went to Ed next. Ed?
Yes.
Dan?
Yes.
And Shannon?
Yes.
And Chair Valvani?
Yes.
The ayes have it.
And I'll vote yes.
Oh, I'm sorry, Counselor.
That's okay.
My fault.
You still have a vote.
I'll get in the game here. Okay. So, and Councillor Cummings is also a yes. There we go. So it's six yeas. Motion passes.
Great, thank you.
Yeah.
I will make the revision to the letter and get that to Chris by tomorrow.
No problem.
So next item is the review of the tree code. We brought that up, or Shannon brought that up in the February meeting, and I think it's worth discussing because there has been an issue with that with the Planning Commission and we had a link to the tree code under the municipal code tree ordinance, and then I forwarded a portion of PBC 55 includes other three requirements for relative to planning for subdivisions and other development. So I think I'll pass this on to Shannon. I think you had some points previously, and maybe that's a good place to start.
And I apologize, everyone. I hate to interrupt, but I got to get off the call. But thank you, everyone, and I apologize for having to cut this short.
Thank you, Dan.
I mean, it just came about because I was listening to your planning
has left the meeting.
Your Planning Commission meeting, and noticed that there was the confusion of the up to 20% when everyone was reading it as, or thinking it meant 20%, and then it was clarified that it's up to 20%, and I just was just like, that doesn't make any sense, because then that means it could be zero. So I don't understand how a tree code, when we're called Tree City or Tree City, how our tree code lets you save 0% of the trees.
Right. Yeah, it's one of the things that we've run up against on a planning committee several times. And so the particular portion of the code is 55-100B2B. And basically it says non-residential and residential projects on non-type 1 and type 2 lands shall set aside up to 20% of the protected areas for significant trees and tree clusters, plus any heritage trees. And then it goes on, and that 20% restriction is mentioned a couple more times in that paragraph. And the applicants who come in are doing what they're being asked to do, which is, you know, to preserve trees, but they're not compelled to save any more than 20% because our code, for some reason, capped us out as, at a maximum.
Which, like, if they wanted to save 50% of the trees, they couldn't because it says up to 20%. That doesn't make sense.
Right. Yeah, it doesn't make sense at all. There may have been a time when it made sense, but it doesn't at this point. So, I don't know if anyone else has any other comments on this, but the Planning Commission would like to make some changes to this, and whether a change in the code comes from the CCI or staff and the Planning Commission. Either way is probably appropriate, but.
Does the Planning Commission, have they made a recommendation as to how what the new code should look like?
No, we, this is pretty much as far as it's gone. So this is wide open for discussion.
Gary, this is Vicki.
Hi, Vicki.
So it's up to 20%. Do you have an example of maybe a conflict that this, and also can they plant, so if maybe the trees on the property aren't working, and so they can remove them and then replant trees?
Well, that's part of what they can do. But if there are So if there are, we've had properties, and I can't remember exactly how many significant trees there may have been on the property, but a fair number of older growth trees. And the applicant would only have to plan their streets and building locations, structure locations, around enough trees to save up to 20% of those. And so then it comes down to, okay, city arborist needs to get involved in a selection of the appropriate trees needs to be made. And so that typically what happens is that the applications come in and the applicant will then say, well, we have instead of 20% of the land from those trees, we've been able to save 23%. So we're exceeding it. They usually try and hang around that 20% number.
Okay, understand.
But the code is still confusing.
Mm-hmm. Now, I think this was part of the cut the red tape where this happened, right? If I understand it correctly. So like, do we know what the code was before?
I don't, and I'm not even sure the origin of this, but it could have been cut the red tape.
Yeah, we do have the archive codes from each year, so in hard copy it. I could take a look and tell you, but I don't have it right now. Right. It's at City Hall, but I could certainly look into that, Shannon, if you're interested.
Yeah, I would be interested to see like what it was before. So, I mean, maybe it's just as simple as going back to the old code.
So probably 2013, because the changes were made in 2014.
14, yeah.
I'd be very interested in seeing the old code, because I thought it said they had to save at least a certain percentage, as opposed to up to, of course. So if that was the case, I think going back to that would probably be good, and then determining what percentage we want to set that at would be still up to us, I think.
Yes, the number 20% is really familiar to me, you know, from my years on the Planning Commission and stuff like this. The words up to, I'm not so sure about. And they might, that still might be antiquated language, I don't know. But I agree that those words, up to, leave a lot of ambiguity. And if our goal is to protect as many trees as possible, especially in relationship to type 1 and type 2 properties, which are constrained and so forth, usually, that, you know, this is also contingent on whether the arborist determines that the trees are significant, you know. So I would personally be in favor of changing that word up to something more like a minimum of 20%, knowing that that's the minimum, and especially when you've got significant trees. And then that would mean that if the applicant wanted to do some variances and wanted to negotiate the variance in any way, that he could mitigate that by providing more than 20% might be one thing useful in that situation.
So Chris, could you check on the previous code from 2013 and at least? And is there a way to send that out to everyone?
Yeah, it is top item on my list here. While we're talking, I can go through our P drive and see if it happens to be in there. I know for a fact it's on hard copy.
Right.
So one way or the other, yeah, I can get you guys And you're specifically referring to the what we're talking about on screen right now, right? You don't necessarily want, you want the whole chapter or just want to focus on the trees?
No, I think just the trees. Okay. I don't know if anyone needs anything else.
So I was able to pull up some stuff just from a Google search because, you know, the city site never gives me what I want. Google search does. So it looks like I'm just looking at what, you know, it's got a bullet point list of what was in the cut the red tape. And it says modify the code to require that 20% of significant trees be preserved rather than 20% of the site area. Additionally, eliminate the requirement for conservation easements for any individual trees. This is just what the cut the red tape was about.
Yeah, I remember it was 20% of the site area in the 90s. So there's a lot of developments that have this little pocket that was 20%. That's when they were doing the planned unit developments, the PUDs were more common.
The current code says, I mean, refers to area and not just number of trees. It refers to the drip line for the tree plus another 10 feet out from that for the regulated area for significant trees and clusters and heritage trees. Okay. Well, I think with more information, we could discuss that further at the next meeting. Mm-hmm. That makes sense?
Yes.
Okay. I think we can move on to the next item, which was to discuss citizen protocols for advisory boards. Loss at the moment for what that meant, but because I'm thinking about the letter, maybe it originally referred to the letter. Sure.
I don't know. Most of this agenda is 2 months old because we just skipped a month. Kicked it into April, and I got nothing on this one.
Yeah. Okay, I don't either. If
citizen protocols for advisory board have anything to do with training, it could have had something to do with everyone taking their training and signing the forms as advisory board members,
which this group has all done, right? I'm going to be asking the city manager to remind all the citizen advisory boards to get that done.
So that in that video, that training video is available off the city website because that's how I went through it a couple of months ago.
And then you sign a form.
It would make sense that could be what it is. That's a good start.
Yeah, I mean, again, the only thing I can recall was when we were putting this agenda together nearly 2 months ago was when all the training was coming, when everyone was supposed to be going through the training and signing their papers. So it seems to make sense that we would have just been noting it, hey, your training, either go on the web or come to the open training, sign the paperwork, send it, you know, that seems to fit the timeline in my head anyway. That's the only thing I've got. And then, you know, I just think it's just in general, it's treating people appropriately and respectfully in meetings and, you know, the basic common sense of how we should interact with one another. That's all I can think of.
While we're in that direction, and maybe someone knows more than I do about this, so at least for the Planning Commission, and I assume City Council, but I'm not sure about the other advisory boards, you have to fill out a what is the name of that? It's basically a conflict of interest form declaration every March.
Oh.
And it goes to the state. It's on the state website.
Yeah, only the Historic Resource Board and the Planning Commission have to do that. Statement of economic interest, that's because you're making actual final decisions potentially.
Okay. Okay. Good to know. Well, not having any other questions or comments on that item, we can move on to item 7, which is topics for future meetings, which I think right now comes out to the looking at the old tree code.
I've got that one down.
Okay. Anyone have any other items for discussion? I mean, at some point it may be worth having, you know, some training, because we have a number of new members, and I'm not sure if Tim Ramos or anyone is providing planning training at this point.
Not that I know of.
Okay. It may be worthwhile at some point to discuss that.
And Chair, if we could maybe also get an update on the document review of the Westland land use planning process that I think is supposed to be reviewed by the City Council. And I think you were going to present that and remind them that they need to review that.
Oh, that's right.
So, Councilor Cummings, do you know what the status is of the CCI report from, was it July 2018?
I have brought it up with the goal setting each year. I bring it up again. It's really definitely been on the back burner. And that's a shame, because an awful lot of work went into that. And in a way, in my opinion, it might warrant, hate to even say it, but maybe another look, because if I remember right, the direction of that whole document was made with the intent of having another group be formed to go through a process. And that never happened. So do you still want to do that, or do you want to just make those recommendations to the council? I guess I'd just like to know, you know, because to me that whole thing was a lot of, this is my own opinion, and I'm sorry if it sounds a little harsh, but it was talking about what you're going to talk about. And that can get kind of frustrating, because you're not really accomplishing much. You really do it, you know.
So, and I think the intent of it was to provide guidance and a path for a working group to actually consider new code. Concert with working with staff in a manner similar to the Willamette code changes that we made for the around Main Street. There was a working group that was pulled together for that. And I think Darren part was the staff person on that, and that went well.
Yeah.
So there were, I think, three meetings. And it was a narrower focus than this would be. So there could be a number of meetings. It would not be a short process, that's for sure, because there were so many changes that were proposed in the report.
There were, and that's, I guess, where I am a little frustrated, because they've never been implemented, it's never made any progress, and yet those were some important discussions, I thought. So I guess I'd just like to hear some ideas or feedback on how you'd like to see this proceed so that we can, make a strong recommendation to council, and actually get some of that work completed before you have to go back to the drawing board,
Can you give us a little more background for us newbies here?
Yeah, so
if you want to put it on your next, on one of your agendas, you the group could probably take a look at it, see what you think about it, and maybe with a new fresh look on it, you'll have a strong recommendation you can make to council about it.
So at the the February meeting.
Yeah.
We had a brief discussion about the Westland land use planning process.
Uh-huh.
And that referring to that report. And so there was, there's a copy of the report on the website associated with the February 18th meeting.
Okay, so that's where the members can find it, at the February 18th meeting?
Right.
Okay.
Right, and.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, sorry, I missed that.
So that's, it's 18 pages. So why don't we, I'll suggest that we put it on the agenda for the next meeting and have some additional discussions, and then try and get this pointed in a direction. I think council has the options of appointing a working group to move forward with, if this fits in line with city goals, council goals. It go through a working group, it could come back to the CCI, and it could go to planning commission. I think it was envisioned as going to a working group, and having it ultimately reviewed by planning commission, and then from there providing a recommendation to council to adopt or make changes to it, revisions to the working group's product.
So, Gary, as we're reading this document for the next meeting, what is it that we should be thinking about? Or if we like the report, if we want to move forward with the report, how should we?
So the report was submitted to council at the end of July 2018.
Yes.
And action, I'm not even sure if there have been discussions, but there hasn't been a formal action on it at this point.
Well, council did do a vote that fall. I can't tell you exactly when it was, but we did do a vote to accept it. We accepted it.
Okay.
Which really means that upon accepting it, we would have started to implement it, but we didn't.
Right, and so that comes to council to direct how the report will be implemented?
Yeah, it would have been up to council to say, okay, let's, form a working group. Here's their advice. This is what they advise. we think we want to do this, okay. And if we agree, we're going to form a working group like your group advised, then we would do that. The problem is it hasn't been done.
Right.
So I really apologize, you know, that it's taken this long. It already has kind of gotten the blessing of the city council. But it probably wouldn't hurt for the council to get a nudge from the CCI on it, you know, and say, if you still think that this is what you want to see happen, you can give us a letter saying so, I would think, or if you have other suggestions, you know, since this much time has transpired, you know, so be it, you know, but maybe it'll be enough to kind of get that thing going.
Okay. That sounds good. So maybe we have a limited discussion on it at the next meeting, because we'll just try and push this along with council. And I mean, the challenge right now is getting a working group together, considering.
Yeah, it is a challenge. I mean, and I don't know how long we're going to have this kind of a difficulty. That's another thing for you guys to consider, you know, if you even think that that's feasible or reasonable right now.
Right. So it's probably still worth reading for members to take a read through this. Mm-hmm. And note that at the very last page, there is a process flow diagram, particularly. John Boyd pulled this together, and it is outstanding. I was incredibly happy the day that this showed up at a meeting. So
I remember this now, because I remember that diagram.
and some additional changes were made to it, but it just makes it easy to understand where the 120 days, you know, really fits into the schedule of everything, and where the changes would fit that are being proposed by this report. So I highly recommend, you know, flipping from, you know, the text to looking at the process diagram as frequently as you need. I have it all pulled up here right now, but it helps dramatically in trying to understand the issues that we've had. And I think Ed can probably confirm that just from the neighborhood association side of it and having presentations on development. So anyway, okay, so let's add it to the list, and then I'll draft up a letter to council. And push this off.
So this is a little different than what I was originally thinking, but I'll ask the question just because. So with EDC, for instance, we're working on some potential rezoning to mixed use to allow more business possibilities of more businesses in West Lynn. And so is it something that you think CCI should look at what process EDC takes and go workers and make recommendations, right? But then would it be something that CCI should review to see what process should be used to actually come up with a more definitive plan, like we did, like the working group we did for the Main Street rezoning, or, you know, is what EDC puts together enough for council to make a decision on?
Well, I think ultimately, if it's a zoning issue, it needs to go through the Planning Commission for recommendation.
Well, yeah, it would go through the planning commission, but it's like, do you think that there should be more citizen involvement than just EDC in having a secondary working group on it like we did for the Main Street one? Or do you think whatever, you know, we throw together on EDC would be sufficient, and then the process would just be through planning commission and council?
Do you think it would be worthwhile to have EDC meet with CCI, or at least do you have a document together at this point?
No, we're just, it's something that we've been kind of pushing for a while now, and we're just kind of getting started on looking into different areas where we think it makes sense and stuff.
I mean, especially with mixed use, that it would seem that that would, you know, include residential as well, and so more community involvement would be welcome. Is this mixed use throughout the city, or especially in commercial or adjacent to commercial corridors?
Yeah, Jay, so we're looking at most of 43 being rezoned. So you're connecting all the business districts. As right now we have, you know, Market of Choice and then some residential until you get to like, you know, the other little strip malls and stuff like that. So basically connecting so you have more of a easier flowing kind of commercial area where everything's connected instead of these pockets of residential. And then the other areas they're looking at is up by the in Sunset where the grocery store is. There's a couple little areas that are zone mixed use or zone commercial up there. So, you know, adding some mixed use around there. Because some, I guess, people are already using some of that as office space, even though it's not technically zoned for it. So yeah, so just kind of expanding it so you have options up there too.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's one of the important points. Shannon, when I sat in on that EDC meeting, what was it, October or November, something a while ago, we had this conversation, and it's really looking at how we can enable more business to come to Westland. It's not necessarily that you have to do something. It's that it would give someone the ability to think that, oh, I could use that space in that format versus requiring them. So right now you couldn't do some of the mixed use stuff in a general commercial zone. You just can't do it. But putting an overlay of mixed use on would maybe allow a developer to be creative and think differently. So, as well as connecting. I mean, Shannon, I think we were on the same page during that meeting. And I think the larger view is, you know, single family housing will not pay our bills in 10 years. I mean, that's not a number, don't quote me on 10 years, but we don't, the tidings is not on this meeting, right? no, but you know, in time, the tax we generate and the funds we generate out of single family housing just, we won't pay all our bills. We're going to need businesses to be in West Lynn. And so how do we enable to do that? And I think that's where the EDC is coming from. But yeah, you're probably right, Gary. I mean, citizens, it's going to be, that's a tough topic. I know, you know, down on 43, there's a lot of neighborhoods. And
I think that the challenge, and maybe this is just my lack of understanding, but the challenge of having business expansion is where does that, based on the way our structure is, our economic structure is set up in the city, I mean, we have a lot of fees, but where do we get money from a tax base, a commercial tax base? And I don't understand. I mean, valuation of property is one thing, but aside from that, I don't know how else we get or derive any additional support for the community from business. And I'd like
street to maintenance. So the street maintenance fees are a lot higher for businesses because they're having, it's based on how many cars are going through there. So when you have a lot more cars to a business district or business area, they're paying a lot more. Like I think, you know, like the old Albertsons building, I think pays some ridiculous amount of street maintenance fee, like $100,000 or something like that, I think. Yeah. So yeah, so that's where it comes from.
Yeah, there's you're right, street maintenance, there's business licensing fees, you know, there's, which are annual, there's a lot of different fees that kind of get tacked on to a commercial property or to a business that don't get tacked on to a residential. And so I think I think ultimately our discussion was just about what does that look like if we're the Economic Development Committee, how do we develop the economy of the city? What's an idea that the EDC could grab onto and really work on, maybe bring something with some substance to council and say, well, this is what we've been working on. And this is some of the data we've seen that what we're seeing. And here's a recommendation or two or three, and trying to really drive some value out of the EDC that could benefit the city. And that's one way to do it, is to try to enable businesses to come in, but it won't be easy. And some will hate it, some will love it. And you're right, that's where we need citizens to be involved. Neighborhood associations, most definitely.
I agree with citizen involvement. I think that I'm not sure that the CCI needs to get involved in the process. I think, you know, the normal process would be EDC recommends something, Planning Commission takes it up, and we'll have public hearings. And I think at that point, it behooves the neighborhood associations to get the word out about the potential changes to the code and how it might impact them and things like that. But I'm not sure I see a direct tie into the CCI at this point anyway. That's my two cents.
It's a fair point if you're already thinking that it would go to the planning, you know, from say the EDC out to some outreach to some neighborhood associations, maybe there's some open houses, then you're gonna go to PC, then you're gonna go to council. Do you need a fourth committee in the middle? Or have we hit all our bases by doing all the other stuff first? And that's, I think Ed's probably right. Let's, at some point it becomes a waste of time.
Yeah, certainly I'm going to take, you know, the notice of these upcoming changes to our NAP meeting going to have in about 3 weeks. And I'll just let the neighborhoods know that, you know, this is coming down the pike at some point. And so it might be something that they would want to keep tabs on, especially Robinwood, Bolton, the most affected neighborhoods, but certainly it affects everybody in the city. So, yeah, but I think that would be the process I would think would play out.
I would also just toss this out, Ed, since you mentioned talking to some neighborhood association presidents and such. There's no recommendation. Like, there's so many steps along the way. And I know that I live here in Westland too, we tend to get a little ahead of ourselves and, well, I heard we're doing this. Like, well, actually we're just talking right now. We're just coming up with ideas and trying to brainstorm, and it's what committees do, is, you know, and so it is in the pipeline, so to speak, but as a discussion and a research project before it gets to anything else. And I know one of those issues will be transportation on 43. And absolutely, that's going to be, that would have, in my opinion, I'm not involved actually, that would have to be part of the discussion. And that would be a big part of that discussion, is how do you deal with that? And where does ODOT play into this? It's their facility that they want to pretend they don't own. But still, there's a whole bunch of players involved and a whole bunch of action that we need to be taken. And it always worries me when I start seeing posts and I start getting phone calls at the office that, well, how can you do this? Like, oh, what? We haven't done anything. We're just talking. So just maybe emphasize that this is all just in a brainstorming sort of research phase more than anything.
Sure. And it's great to get involved early on so that the people.
100%.
EDC is a public committee, right? People can go there and test.
Really?
Yeah. And so I think it'd be great to get the public input start at the earlier in the process rather than have to react later. And that's when sometimes people's emotions get involved and things like that. So if we can, you know, get involved early, that probably would help, I think might help the process eventually achieve its goal. So
I agree with that 100%.
I think you're muted.
There's another aspect here also to keep in mind, and that's House Bill 2001, that the mandate for duplexes and quadruplexes and so forth. And that the city would also be mandated to going through a process of identifying where those would be and that sort of thing. And so if you do want to do things that will strengthen and enhance the business districts and the business aspects of these transportation corridors, I think you need to look at this all together. You know, how do you want this to, you know, come together? Because it just seems a lot of the discussion is going in the direction of that probably it makes the most sense to have a lot of the density, you know, in that area. But you're also talking about wanting to look at the mixed use commercial on the bottom, living space on the top, mixed use type of configuration. So this is an important time to be having that discussion.
And that's what we thought, you know, if we change it to mixed use, then you have that scenario where you could have a business on the bottom and then have, you know, multifamily units on top, and then you're keeping all that density, you know, in the corridor where you have access to public transportation, where it only makes sense. I mean, that's my whole problem with that House bill, was that, you know, it doesn't make sense to have density where there's no access to transportation. It's just,
that was my problem.
Well, and my issue, and I think the Planning Commission's issue in general, is that it throws zoning under the bus, so to speak. And
yes.
We've gone through all this effort in this state for 40 plus 50 years to set up a consistent land use policy, including zoning, and this completely rips through the residential zoning process and turns any lot where a single family house is located into a duplex, a triplex, or a fourplex. And so anyway, it's a huge discussion. That's a lot to bite off. It doesn't seem as if CCI needs to necessarily get involved with EDC's process at this point, but having you on both committees, you can keep us appraised of what's going on. That sounds good. We can move on to member comments and kind of wrap up. I'm not sure if anyone has, I have a couple things, but and I guess I'll just go ahead then. First, I'd like to thank Ed in public and to thank you for letting the Planning Commission know about the Savannah Heights issue, because the Planning Commission doesn't have any compliance authority over the permit conditions that we have, and frankly we don't have the time, and staff doesn't seem to have the they may get involved with things, but I'm not even sure where the changes on this actually came about. So I'd just like to thank you for bringing that up, because it was a point of discussion at our Planning Commission meeting a couple of weeks ago. For the rest of you, if you're not aware, it's a small subdivision over in Savannah Oaks neighborhood. There was a single house there, and it was subdivided to make five more lots. Four of those lots were going to be off a private driveway, basically flag lots coming off that driveway. And then the fifth house was going to have access to a street. And ownership changed, the development changed, and at some point, the house that was supposed to have access to the street and the driveway is still there in the concrete. but a a house foundation went up and the garage faces that private street. There's a code limitation. So you can only have up to 4 homes off a private street. If you go more than that, you have to put in a public street. And as far as I can tell, I mean, I've driven by, I haven't been back over there in the past week, but it seems to be just in a stalemate. I don't see anything going on. I haven't heard anything as far as that. But the Planning Commission's concern was that we had a condition of approval, and it required that private street place limitations on the number of houses served by it based on the code, and that changed somehow. So I just want to thank you, Ed, for bringing that up, because it we wouldn't have known otherwise.
Well, that development had the unfortunate situation of being across the street from my house. So it was fairly noticeable to me when it went in like that. But I just like to see, you know, I knew the Planning Commission had that condition of approval, and I knew the city requirements of, you know, no more than 4 homes on a shared driveway or a shared access like that. So it concerned me a little bit that changed without going through the planning process again, you know.
Right. Well, that's good.
So what happens in that scenario? Do they, if they're found like violating something, and do they have to take it down, or is it like ask for forgiveness kind of thing, like what they do with trees? Is they ask for forgiveness, they just take them down?
It's not a situation where it's supposed to be asked for forgiveness. It should be a situation where they come back to the Planning Commission and ask for a change, or they just change the foundation on that house and have the garage serve off of the street instead of off of the private driveway. So I think they've got 2 choices, and we don't know which one they're going to take. So
I think the other kind of concern from the developer standpoint was, I believe in the correspondence I saw, that they actually probably got approval from the city to make this change. And so now they're probably telling the city, well, you guys told us it was okay to do this. And so there's kind of that situation, I'm sure, going back and forth between the city and the developer to see how to resolve it.
And so from the Planning Commission's perspective, they need to come back and see us or go along with the original permit conditions. But anyway, I just wanted to bring that up as a comment tonight. And if there's nothing else, Commissioner Cummings, you're on mute.
Mr. Myers, are you familiar with this situation? Do you know about the status of this particular one by any chance?
I don't. I believe Ed is correct. I believe at some point they had approval to do so. Yeah. So I imagine they're doing a lot of speaking with their attorneys about whether they want to push that, whether the PC wants to see it again or not. There's probably some legal ground for the fact that if they did have approval from the city to do what they're doing, you know, so I imagine they're working with their attorney right now, trying to figure out what approach they want to take. So that would be my take.
Yeah. And from a CCI point of view, this is kind of like one of those examples of, you have a land use approval, you have conditions of approval, there's a hearing process, everybody thinks that's what's going to happen. And then you find out that that's not what happened. And this happens, I can tell you. I've seen plenty of examples where things don't turn out the way that they were planned or approved to be built. They get, things happen differently. And the question for, you know, people that are aware of it, that are, you know, interested in it or concerned about it, is how did that change happen, and why wasn't there a, you know, an open public process for that change? Is it because we don't have a requirement for that? Is it that things can just be changed without anybody knowing? And that kind of doesn't seem fair. So I guess I am curious here, what do we have here that made somebody think that they could give approval to change a condition of approval? Is there a process that allows flexibility for that, or you know, how do we make clear what the process is in the future, I guess is my concern.
What also, oh, go ahead, Gary, sorry.
Well, I was just going to say that the Planning Commission is pretty clear that the process is already there. And it just wasn't followed. So, and I've indicated that in an email to the interim city manager. That that's pretty much our position.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, I agree that the process is there. I don't want to really speak out of turn, and I think Ed actually knows more about this than anyone on this call right now. I've also been privy to the communication. I think at the end of the day, it was an honest mistake. And so right now, counselor, the best form of information you can get is from John Williams. He's both the planning director and the community development director and the city manager. We report to him. I believe it was a staff error of all things. I believe it was an oversight on a staff member's part, like an honest whoops mistake amongst the many things that you have to look at in a subdivision review. But I don't want to speak too far out of turn, but if you really want a true update on it, I think John Williams would be your best bet.
On a small scale, I do think that there's just a lot of, I don't know if it's interpretation of the code or what, you know, because I know that a member of EDC brought this up too, is that he was trying to build like just a retaining wall. So that's not something coming to Planning Commission. And he was told three different things from the city. So he went in, city said you didn't need anything for it. And so he started building it. And then he happens to be neighbors with someone that's staff. And that staff person said, no, you can't do that. And so he came back in and got told a different story that you need a permit. So he filed all the paperwork and then was told by the person reviewing the paperwork, you don't need to fill out this paperwork. And so he's just very confused whether he could build this wall or not.
So I know what you're talking about. It was happening when I first arrived in West Lynn as a planner, not living here, but working here. And look, the one thing about that, and then, you know, we don't have to dig too far into it, is you cannot put things on the city's property. End of story. You cannot build a retaining wall 18 inches or 16 inches onto the city's right of way. There's no code for that. There's no special form for that. You build on our property, you're going to have to take it down. That's it.
But see, he was, yeah, I know, but I'm saying he got mixed messages. When he first went in, and he said, yeah, but he said he was able to, he didn't need it. And so that's why I think he went and testified to council too, that he was very confused by the whole process, because, you know, he went in, he said what he was doing, and then he said, no, you don't need a permit, you can do it. And then he was told he couldn't do it, and then he was told he could do it. And so.
And the code can be confusing on all these issues, and things like retaining walls are really mushy. We, on our staff meeting with John this morning, talked about, we have a running list of pieces of the code that clearly don't work or need to be revised, kind of like the tree code. And we just have a running list, and there are all these ongoing projects. Like, boy, when we have time, famous last words, let's take a look at this piece. Because we'll have chapters that say one thing and another chapter that says a conflicting thing. So that makes it really difficult to uphold the code when you can get different answers out of different pieces of the code. So I think, the scary part is we probably need a really good thorough overhaul of the code just to clean it up, just to make sure it's precise. And things like retaining walls are really confusing. Over a certain height, you have to have engineering. You know, you can build up to the property line, but not over the property line. You know, I mean, it's planning and code is very confusing. And you're right. There's a lot of parsing of words. There's a lot of legal speak that can be read in multiple ways, and it can be frustrating for sure.
You know? Yeah, I mean, that was my point, is that just like I think there's just needs to be a clearer process or something, so it's easier for citizens to get a straight answer and not have this confusion.
Getting back to this issue of whether there right now, whether there would be five houses accessing the flag lot or four, with the fifth one accessing the street. My concern on this kind of a thing happening is that I think you need to have a clear process that was established for this situation, whether it's in retrospect or not, because in the future you can have another person wanting to build on a flag lot and pointing to that one and saying, I want that. You've got one right over there. And you've got to be able to say to that person, yes, that was an exception and this is how it was handled, you know, or, you know, there has to be an explanation.
I agree. We get that all the time. I don't go through a week of work without getting that three or four times. It's usually about, well, how come he didn't have to build a sidewalk, but you're making me build a sidewalk?
Exactly. I know.
The reality of it is the ultimate, what it is, well, that house is 14 years old, and 14 years ago they didn't have to build a sidewalk. Today you have to build a sidewalk. That's just that things change,
right? Sorry. But if you don't have something that shows a document, this is what happened in 2020 about this situation, this is how it was handled, we just need to have a clearer process, I think.
So what's interesting though is at the Planning Commission's meeting in earlier this month, our first virtual meeting, we had a street ordinance discussion and code discussion relating to private streets and street cross sections and things like that. And so there was already a discussion in the works, and then all of this came up at the same time that this was going to be, if not for the pandemic, we would have been having this discussion, I think, possibly in March instead of in April. But anyway, there are hopefully some code changes that are going to come up that will put some further restrictions on this. Hopefully reduce the confusion. But it doesn't change the fact that in the future there would be something different than there is now. So
with that kind of a thing, is there something the CCI wants to do? Is there something the CCI wants to say as far as a citizen engagement or involvement in changes that are made? You guys haven't,
you know, that's on that? That's a good point, and there's going to be some proposed code coming back to the Planning Commission, and it may be worth having CCI take a look at it as well, just because just to get a broader sense, although there will be a hearing on it as well, so there'll be a public hearing, and I think the changes that were made, we're trying to accept that there are times when people are developing their own property, and so there's a reason to have a flag lot and reason to have a private driveway, but it's been taken advantage of too frequently, and the code we have is the code we have, and so we have to make decisions based on what is presently allowed until that changes. So that's where we're at. But We may have code changes coming to us shortly, and probably the big change would be that the default street cross section would be the 28-foot wide street, and because of the issues that came up over on Satter Street, and where that was a 24-foot wide street, and that width doesn't allow enough space for parking on the street. And that's caused issues that we became aware of at least 2 years ago. So there's a policy memo in place right now that 28 feet wide is the default width, but this would also provide for code changes. So there, you know, in normal neighborhood streets, we would have a 28-foot wide street. There'd be parking on one side. There could still be locations based on topography where you would still step down to a 24-foot wide street and not have any parking on the street. So that would be clarified in that code as well. So. Not sure when that code will be to us, possibly next week.
Sorry, Gary, to interrupt. We talked about it at staff meeting today. Darren's drafting some amendments for the 28-foot street and companion memo to limit private streets to 3 homes. He's going to discuss it with engineering, and then he's going to speak to you about the private street issue. So soon. So it's on Darren's list right now.
Okay. Great. Well, I think that's all I have, and we're coming up on 7 o'clock. So, any other comments? Okay. Well, with that, I think we can adjourn, and it is 6:56.
All right. I have stopped recording.